Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done. If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
4 weeks. Probably going on months now, quite honestly. This case, the David Celeste Rivas Hernandez case, has existed in kind of a half shadow, if you will. A 15-year-old girl gone missing, a decomposed body found inside a Tesla, a well-known music artist whose vehicle had become the center of a death investigation, a long silence from the LAPD, and a public trying to make sense of a case with large, unsettling gaps in the timeline. Everything felt suspended, not because nothing was happening, but because everything was happening behind closed doors. Until now, the silence is cracking, not with an arrest, not with a cause of death ruling, not with a press conference or a prosecutor walking into a courtroom with a stack of charges. Although we may not be far from that taking place. No, right now, the break came with something much quieter, much more consequential, and more harder for investigators to take back. It came with a single word. That single word? Suspect. Didn't come from a podium. It didn't come from LAPD's public information office. It didn't come from a filed affidavit. It came from inside the investigation, allegedly, through multiple Los Angeles outlets, quoting multiple law enforcement sources. NBC4 ran it first, ABC7 followed, People magazine published corroboration from more than one law enforcement insider. And suddenly, practically overnight, the entire tone of this case has shifted because of that word, suspect. The public narrative has reframed itself, and the weight of that single word has landed squarely in the center of a story that has been drifting without structure. Now, I got to say this, because as of this recording still, it has not been said in a public setting, in a press conference, in a affidavit, in a release, in something stating that David is a suspect. But from multiple sources now, multiple agencies, news agencies, they are reporting that inside sources are telling them that David is being looked at as a suspect. That's what's going on right now. That is the current atmosphere that we are seeing and the current atmosphere we are in and the current atmosphere we're operating in around this case. Before now, why is this a big deal? We didn't know. But because the vehicle belongs to David, isn't he naturally a suspect? No, not naturally. He's not. They have to dig into this. They have to look into this. And we're almost more than 2 months in now into this. And that is the language, that is the verbiage that is being used allegedly now behind the scenes, as opposed to at the beginning. That word was not being thrown around at the beginning. It is now. Curious to get all of your thoughts on this in the comment section on YouTube. We're going to keep digging into this here, and there's more in this story we're going to get to in just a second. But I do want to remind you, please hit subscribe on YouTube. We're trying to get up to 100,000 by the end of the year. We're getting there. So if you got a moment, you like our stuff, you want to keep following our commentaries and our coverage of the cases, please do hit subscribe on YouTube right now. We do greatly appreciate that. And even more importantly, comment. Tell us what your thoughts are on this story. And if you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, do hit subscribe there. Okay, so as new information is continuing to leak out, information about multiple suspects, possible disembarkment, lack of cooperation, and the timeline that investigators say stretches all the way back into the spring, the picture taking shape behind the scenes is darker, more complex, and far more coordinated than most people originally understood. So let's walk through it carefully, precisely, without sensationalism, without speculation, and without forgetting what sits at the center of this case. A child. Because when investigators start talking, even anonymously, about suspect status, about help in disposal, about an extended decomposition timeline, about evidence that the body was altered after death, the stakes rise dramatically. And the public deserves to understand what we actually know, what remains uncertain, and what these new developments actually mean for the path forward. Let's start with the one thing that changed everything, the suspect designation. Investigators rarely use that word prematurely. It's not a casual descriptor. It's not a placeholder. It's not a synonym for someone we're looking at. It is a legal term of art that signals the investigation is no longer wandering through theories. It has direction, momentum. It has a focal point. NBC reported it first. Their source, someone they say with direct knowledge of the LAPD investigation, stated plainly, Singer David is considered a suspect. Not officially named, not charged, not arrested, but internally, that is the word being spoken, according to NBC. ABC7 echoed it. A source with knowledge of the case says he is considered a suspect. People magazine published that multiple law enforcement insiders use the same term. He's being investigated as a suspect. And that matters, not because the public decided it, not because social media theorized it, but because investigators who are actually working the case have allegedly changed their language. And now, with these updates, we know more about why. According to the same NBC4 reporting and additional outlets, investigators now believe more than one person may have been involved in what happened to Celeste, not only in the events leading to her death, but in what happened after. And multiple outlets have confirmed that law enforcement sources believe the body was dismembered after her death. We're not taking that detail lightly. We're not going to that detail all of the information there or speculate on it. It's not helpful. It's not necessary. But the fact that investigators believe this occurred is crucial because postmortem altercation of remains is a different tier of criminal behavior. It indicates panic. It indicates concealment. It indicates organization. And it strongly suggests multiple participants. More importantly, investigators believe David likely had help. That's not an accusation. That's not a conviction. That's a framing from the very people combing through the evidence, allegedly. And if investigators believe multiple people assisted in the concealment, then this case is no longer a simple death investigation. It's a coordinated concealment investigation with possible homicide implications. This is our speculation based on the pieces that are sitting out in front of us right now. It raises the stakes of every decision that investigators make from here on out. It raises the stakes of every leak. It raises the stakes of every conversation they have with witnesses, with potential accomplices, with friends, with family, with anyone adjacent to the events of the spring and summer. Let's anchor this in the timeline, because the timeline itself has shifted a little bit. Early reports suggest Celeste may have died sometime in the summer, perhaps not long before the Tesla was discovered in the tow yard. But the new information indicates that investigators believe the death likely occurred months earlier, in the spring of 2025. And that means the Tesla, and by extension the body, may have been in a state of concealment far longer than actually originally understood. That also aligns with the decomposition. Bodies decompose in patterns. Investigators know those patterns well. They know them across climates, temperatures, environments, containment types, ventilation variations, insect activity, humidity, and time. If investigators believe the body was placed in that vehicle in the spring, they likely have a decomposition timeline to back that up. The public does not have those details. We probably won't until the medical examiner releases the complete report, but investigators don't guess decomposition windows. They actually measure them. And that brings us to another major update: surveillance and private investigation details. According to new reporting from Los Angeles Magazine and other outlets, a private investigator hired by the Hollywood Hills landlord who once rented property to David claims to have obtained surveillance footage showing who drove the Tesla shortly before it was abandoned. We are not naming the person because investigators have not confirmed this publicly, but if that footage is authentic, it adds another layer to the case, a potential visual timeline of the vehicle's final movements before it was discarded. Why does that matter? Because it tells investigators whether David himself drove the vehicle or whether someone else did. And if someone else drove it, someone who wasn't the registered owner, someone who wasn't the victim, that person immediately becomes a key figure in the timeline, possibly a witness, possibly an accomplice, possibly a suspect. And here's where things grow even more complicated: the claim that David has not been cooperating. According to NBC4's law enforcement sources, the artist has not cooperated with investigators. Again, this is according to NBC4. That detail matters because when someone's vehicle is directly connected to a death, cooperation is typically expected, even encouraged legally, to clarify innocent involvement or establish a timeline that excludes culpability. Failure to cooperate does not indicate guilt, legally speaking, but it alters investigative posture. It changes the pace and tone of questioning. It changes the urgency behind warrants. It changes the tone investigators use when speaking off the record. And when you combine sources saying he's not cooperating with sources saying we consider him a suspect, the narrative becomes clearer. Investigators are pushing, and their language is reflecting internal certainty that this is not yet ready for public release. But there is still one missing piece, arguably the most important: the medical examiner's official findings. As of this recording, cause and manner of death are still publicly undisclosed. That alone is the linchpin in whether this becomes a homicide case, a manslaughter case, a negligence case, an overdose case, a trafficking case, or something even more complicated. The medical examiner's report will either confirm or refute certain speculative elements. It will anchor the timeline. It will answer whether injuries existed, whether toxins existed, whether there were signs of restraint, whether decomposition masked something, and whether the body was moved, whether dismemberment was postmortem or antemortem. Investigators likely have preliminary findings. They always do. And those findings often guide decisions long before the public sees the final version. But they cannot act on those findings until they are formalized, documented, and admissible. So why leak the suspect designation now? Here's the truth most people don't understand. Leaks serve strategic purposes. Sometimes leaks are frustration. Investigators watching a case stall publicly and feeling the pressure to move things along. Sometimes leaks are tactical, intended to flush out witnesses, encourage confessions, or shake loose additional information by putting heat on the persons involved. And sometimes leaks are protective, ensuring the public understands the gravity of a case, even when official bodies remain silent. And sometimes leaks are simply the unavoidable result of too many people knowing too much. But one thing is consistent across all major cases. Once law enforcement insiders begin using the word suspect to describe someone, they do not walk that back unless something seismic shifts in the case, because using that word prematurely destroys credibility. And using that word internally sets expectations for the direction of the investigation. But if the suspect designation is only one part of the update, the broader picture that emerges from all new reporting is even more serious. Investigators believe Celeste's death likely occurred in spring. Investigators believe her body was altered post-mortem. Investigators believe the body was hidden for a significant period. Investigators believe the vehicle was moved and eventually abandoned. Investigators believe David likely had help. Investigators believe multiple individuals may be complicit, and investigators believe he has not cooperated with their inquiries. Those are the allegations right now of what the investigators believe, according to multiple news sources. And investigators have begun using the word suspect. It paints a different case than the one the public first encountered. A case that no longer looks like a tragic, unexpected death, but like a coordinated event with multiple players, concealment planning, and a deeply troubling timeline. But we have to keep something central as we analyze all of this. Celeste, a 15-year-old girl, is at the center of this investigation. A child who did not get the urgency she deserved when she disappeared. A child whose vulnerability made her a target for exploitation. A child whose disappearance was too easy for the system to push aside because of her history of running away. A child whose death now reveals something far darker than a runaway case gone wrong. And as the case moves into its next phase, one that appears incredibly inevitable, the focus needs to stay on her, not on the celebrity whose name attached itself to this tragedy by circumstance, by connection, or by something investigators may believe is far more deliberate. So where do we go next? Where does this case go? We wait for the medical examiner's findings. We wait for additional forensic results. We wait for digital evidence returns. We wait for investigators to decide whether suspect becomes arrestee. We wait for the moment this case either explodes publicly or goes eerily quiet. What we do know is that the tone has changed. The internal language has changed. The investigative posture has changed. The suspect list, once empty or vague, now appears to have multiple entries. And the belief that this was the action of a single person has also evaporated. It is clear investigators are nearing a point where silence is no longer sustainable. Because in every major case, there's a moment where the quiet breaks, where the story stops drifting and snaps into place, where investigators show their hand, not in press conferences, but in the language they allow to be known. And in this case, that moment comes not from the LAPD, not from the district attorney, not from a public record filing, but from the whisper inside the investigation that has now grown loud enough for the world to hear. Suspect. That word changes everything. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. Are we going to see charges coming up here for David? Are we at that point? Or is this, again, a lot of nothing? Because if you really play it out, if you look at all of the possible angles here, all of the situations that could be occurring, okay, you got people, you got NBC, you got ABC, you got all these local outlets digging into this, going to their sources. Maybe it's the same source. Maybe the same person saying suspect. And you got to look at that. Is that person leaking that? Are they leaking it on purpose? Are they just speaking aloud? Did they have a rough night? And they're just kind of on the phone as a suspect. Oh, shoot, maybe I shouldn't use that word. I keep saying that. There's a lot of possibilities here until it's officially on the record out in the open. There's a lot of possibilities here. And this is a case where people are desperate for answers and are going to cling on to anything that seems different than the last official reports or lack thereof that we've gotten. But these are reputable news sources. They have their sources. They're going to be very careful in what is in fact reported. So I personally am leaning more towards, I think we're going to see something very interesting happening soon. Exactly what that is, I don't know. But I think we're probably on the cusp of a major turning point in this investigation where we see authorities taking action. What is that action? Give me your thoughts in the comments. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you are listening to us or watching us. If you're watching us on YouTube, please do hit subscribe there. Hit that bell so you don't miss any of our reporting on this. We're trying to get to 100,000 subscribers by the end of the year. We might do it. We're a bit over 80 now. I think we're like 82 something. So thank you guys for that. If you've already hit subscribe, thank you. If you've not done so, please hit it. Really, really appreciate it. And you'll like it too, because we put out a lot of content every single day on the cases that matter to you. So please do that. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.